Welcome to episode 27 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the internet by improving your customer experiences online and off. My name's Tema Frank, and I'm your host. I just got back from California, where I was attending the CXPA Insight Exchange. And if you're not familiar with the CXPA, it's the Customer Experience Professionals Association. And if you work in that field, I think you should take a really close look at joining it. Really great people, learned a ton at the conference, as well as having fun meeting really lovely people. It was also a bit of a nostalgia trip for me because it was in Coronado, which is a gorgeous sort of suburb of San Diego. And for many years, my family and I would all meet there at Christmas time because my parents spent their winters there. So it was kind of weird being there without my kids. I got to tell you, distances seem much shorter when you're not walking, dragging two little kids along. Anyway, back on topic here. Today, we have two interviews that I recorded during that conference, both of which have one thing in common, apart from the fact that they're both people focused on customer experience. And that is, they're both in organizations where to deliver great, consistent customer experience, they need to deliver it through affiliates, associates, partners who are not directly under their control. So the first one is Aaron Wallace, who is the Global Manager of Customer Experience at John Deere, the tractor manufacturer, among many other things. Big global company, and their direct interaction with customers happens at the dealership level, and those people are not directly their employees. So how do you ensure that you're delivering that consistent, excellent customer experience through people who aren't your employees? Same sort of issue when I spoke to our second interviewee. His name is Raj, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name, but you'll hear it in the interview. He is the Senior Manager, Global Customer Insights at eBay. And again, you know, one of the things that they found in their customer research, a big complaint from customers had to do with uncertainty over delivery times. Well, the people who have to make those deliveries, it's not eBay. It's the people who are selling on eBay. But of course, it influences eBay's reputation. So again, we have some interesting conversation in there about how do you make that work if you're not the one in control? There's a fair bit of jargon that comes up when you're hanging out in customer experience circles. And so I just wanted to run through a few of the terms that you'll hear in these interviews in case you're not familiar with them. First of all, CX is used as the abbreviation for customer experience. So if you're looking for customer experience related stuff on Twitter, for instance, try using the hashtag CX or CXO, which is often customer experience officer. Another one you hear a lot in this business is NPS, which stands for the Net Promoter Score. And if you're not familiar with that, I'd suggest you look it up on Google. It's based on a metric that was put together by Fred Reichheld at Bain & Company. And basically it says, on a 10-point score, you consider all the people who give you a 9 or a 10 to be your net promoters. Anyone who gives you 7 or 8 are kind of neutral. Anyone who gives you 6 or below is a detractor. And so the net promoter score is taking your numbers of promoters, subtracting your number of detractors. And as you can imagine, that can even be a negative score as well. And a lot of companies use that as sort of a general guideline for how they're doing in the opinion of their customers. The third bit of jargon that comes up a few times is VOC, which stands for Voice of the Customer, which can mean a whole bunch of things, but basically it refers to feedback from the customers in their own words. So whether that's through feedback that the customer has sent in, whether it's through their verbatim responses on surveys, whatever, all those things put together make up what's considered the voice of the customer, or VOC. Very important thing to be listening to. I'll chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
I'm Erin Wallace. I'm the Global Manager of Customer Experience with John Deere.
Tell us a little bit about, I mean, I grew up in Alberta. We got lots of farms. I know John Deere. But just, if you talked about how global and large it is in scope, just to give the audience a sense of what you were dealing with there.
Yeah, sure. So at John Deere, we have two growth centers of operation, our agricultural business and our construction business. Complementing those growth businesses, we have our turf business as well as our forestry business. And we also have four supporting operations, which include financial services, parts operations, power systems, and technology services.
Okay, so and you're spread throughout the globe.
Spread throughout the world, yep. About 40% of our business today comes outside of the U.S. Okay. We aspire to flip that percentage and make 60% of our business come outside of the U.S. in by 2018.
And in terms of numbers of employees?
About 65,000.
So that's a lot of people. Yes. And you were saying you work with an independent distributor network as well. So there are complications there because they're kind of in between you and the ultimate user of the product.
Absolutely.
So that adds a wrinkle as well.
Then. Absolutely. They're the face of our of John Deere to our customers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And as you say, you can't control them directly.
No, it's a shame sometimes.
I'm sure it'd be frustrating. One of the things that you talked about was the importance, obviously, we all know it's important to get senior level buy-in, but you were suggesting that if you don't have that at the outset, that you can use, it sounds like a combination of financial metrics and data to try and make the case that way, and also an analogy. And I love the way you were using the tractor as something they could all relate to. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that was and how you do that?
Sure. So what I have found is that not everyone speaks the customer experience language. If you aren't a customer experience professional and attending events like this. So you really have to speak the language of the organization. At John Deere, everyone knows what a tractor is. Everyone knows what the critical components are and what are important about that tractor to our customers. And so we use an analogy that relates to tractors. And we say to have an optimal customer experience program, you have to have a steering wheel, just like in a tractor. You have to have a way to guide that tractor and a steering wheel, as well as other technology these days, or how you guide tractors. That's equated to our organization and governance in customer experience language.
Okay.
So we have to have something to steer. You have to have wheels, right, to move the tractor. And in customer experience, those are the processes and tools like standard VOC processes and journey mapping, for example, that move forward your program. You've got to have power under the hood. For us, that's our measurement program, the engine of the program. And you have to have a windshield that you can clearly see through, or a vision, right, that you can clearly see so that you understand the plan to execute. And so using that analogy has been really helpful to help people understand what an all-encompassing customer experience program is, which has helped us make the step from a measurement or a score to more effective customer experience management. And leveraging the measurement system that's been in place for quite some time, we've been able to create linkages to financial outcomes,
okay,
as well as operational measures that are really important to the business. And what that's done is help bring on board executive support that really didn't exist before.
So what kind of measures did you look for then in creating those?
Yep, we looked to better understand the financial impact of promoters versus non-promoters, for example.
Okay.
How much more revenue did promoters bring to the business versus non-promoters? What would be the opportunity gap, the opportunity to move non-promoters to promoters in terms of revenue? We also looked at the different experiences between promoters and non-promoters when it comes to quality, mm-hmm, and how quality influences how a customer is likely to recommend John Deere or not.
Right.
And those measures are critical to our manufacturing operations. Our sales numbers are critical to our sales and marketing operations. So right, you can make the linkage to essentially the core parts of our business by linking to those two areas.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And as you said in your presentation, the opportunity cost, if you could have turned more people into promoters, mm-hmm, how much extra revenue could you have made?
Yeah, it was significant, right? I mean, comparable to a new product program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you also talked about some very innovative ways to try to get customer feedback. So maybe if you can talk a little bit about, for instance, your Chatterbox program. What is that?
Chatterbox is a great way for customers to have a direct voice to Deere. It is literally a box, looks kind of like a semi-trailer, and it is transported to customer work sites, to our dealers, to trade shows around the world. Customers can enter this Chatterbox and sit down comfortably in front of a microphone and literally tell John Deere their experience with our products or our dealer channel or whatever the topic is that they want to talk to us about. Those interviews are listened to, they're heard at all levels of the organization, from product engineering to our senior leaders to our dealer channel, and is truly a strong voice directly from our customers to John Deere. It has also fed a campaign, not really a campaign, but really the way that we behave within customer or within construction and forestry, where not only do we listen, but we also need to communicate back that we heard our customers.
I was going to ask you that. What's the next step once you have that data?
Yeah, so we can leverage those pieces where customers told us what they needed and come back and say, we heard you, and this is what we're doing. And we've actually done some measures of the impact, right, of responsiveness to customer needs.
And, oh, and what have you found?
We have found that that responsiveness from a B2B perspective in the construction market is critical to gaining those customers for life, right? For generations, which is our objective with our customer experience management program. And that the lift that we see from customers really believing through our actions that we're committed to being responsive to their needs has been significant.
Interesting. I mean, that makes sense, right?
But yep.
You also talked about the importance of working within the existing culture and the existing structure of an organization.
Yep.
So how can you do that? I mean, can you give some examples?
I think the first step to do that successfully is to understand how work gets done and decisions get made within your organization.
Right.
So we might think that the best way to make a decision for a customer is to have the power to make that change, to do it ourselves, or to direct how that needs to be done. But if your organization doesn't operate that way, you can wish for that all you want and it won't happen.
Right.
So understand how decisions are made and structure your customer experience, organization, and governance around that. Mm-hmm. At Deere, we make decisions through what we call product line management teams, which are cross-functional teams that include folks from quality and engineering and marketing and sales, for example. And these groups together make decisions about what is going to happen with that product. In the same way, we created a management team that is cross-functional and collaborative, where people come together and make decisions about customer experience. Mm-hmm. And that's been real effective for us.
Hmm. One of the things that struck me, has struck me in talking to others, is sometimes whether it's dealers or whoever, sometimes people within the organization are reluctant to talk directly to customers, whether it's because they're afraid of spending time or because they just don't quite know how to go about it. If I understood correctly, you were saying that you had done some stuff to try and facilitate that. Did I catch that or no?
Yes. At John Deere Financial, that we created an executive connection program with three levels of opportunities for employees at all levels to observe customers. So there are some folks that, as you said, may not want to meet and directly engage or connect with customers, but they definitely want to learn.
Right.
And so they're definitely willing to show up and sit in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
They may not want to go out on the customer's farm,
right.
Or operation. And so there's a whole list of ways for employees to observe customers to better understand their needs and how we fulfill those or fall short.
Mm-hmm.
The next kind of level of opportunities we call engage, and those are opportunities for people to directly engage with customers, but maybe not with a deep commitment, right, in terms of longevity. The last level is focus. So if you choose to focus on our customers, then you are signing up for essentially a 3-year engagement with a strategic customer, right? And you're signing up for specific ways to interact with that customer. And it doesn't matter
like what
change. So, for example, you participate in strategic account reviews. You participate in on-premise site visits with those customers. Our strategic account management process involves understanding very broadly what are the pressures and problems that customer is going through, what are their plans for the future, and then collaborating on how can we help relieve those pressures, solve those problems, and contribute to those plans. And that might be much more broadly than just John Deere Financial, right? And so it's looking at how can we leverage all of the resources within Deere for that customer's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it might involve leveraging our HR expertise,
right?
Or leveraging information about agronomics, for example. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different level of engagement that you sign up for when you partner with a strategic account.
Well, one thing I thought that was really interesting, you had a lovely little map that showed different how to set the priorities in some ways. And you were saying that one of the exciting opportunity areas are where things are very stressful for your customers, but they wouldn't necessarily have thought of John Deere as being someone who could help them, or someone, some organization that could help them solve those. Can you elaborate on why you see that as an exciting opportunity?
Yeah, because that could be the future for us, right? That could be where we play next to support customer needs. And I'll give you an example. That is agronomy, or the science of how you really grow crops effectively.
Yeah.
How do you increase your yield to produce more?
Right.
So we definitely understand how to build and optimize machines for their job. We want to help customers and lead the optimization of planting, of harvest, of the things that are core to John Deere. And what we want to support, which I think falls in that box of things that are highly impactful, but they don't necessarily see John Deere playing, is agronomic optimization.
Okay.
And the way that we can help with that is all of the data that's collected on machines today can inform agronomic plans.
Hmm.
And so some of our more advanced dealers will actually have agronomists on staff that
wow.
can provide consultation to customers in terms of how do we use this information coming off machines to make the best agronomic decision that results in improved yield and improved profitability.
Very cool. I like that.
It's a really cool space.
So what have you found to be the most challenging or difficult aspects of getting to where you are now in terms of your customer experience programs?
I think finding the right balance between prescription and guidance, maybe.
Okay.
Particularly when it comes to our dealer channel.
Right.
We believe that our dealer channel is the most enduring differentiator that we have at John Deere. It's not, at the end of the day, products will become, aren't necessarily the differentiator for us, but our dealer channel, the relationships that they have with our customers are. And so in customer experience, you want to provide a consistently distinctive experience every time.
Right.
And when you are the retail outlet, right, to your customers, you can control that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think finding a balance between prescribing, what does it look and feel like to be John Deere versus working with dealers to understand the capabilities that need to be developed and the helping them address their challenges and enabling them to be that differentiator, right? So it's definitely a mix between what our channel partners need, and it's different in different parts of the world. So we're really blessed here in the U.S. to have a channel. Our channel partners are unlike any other. I mean, they are clearly... they clearly enable John Deere to stand out from our competition. It's not that way in a lot of places of the world, in some of our growing markets and in those markets.
I was thinking,
right?
Is it partially because you haven't been there as long,
right.
and they haven't got as
exactly.
much experience?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mechanization in some parts of the world is brand new. Right.
Right.
So it's just managing that in a global environment is one of our challenges that we're working through and doing so in a very decentralized organization, I think, would say is also a challenge.
That's
it just takes longer. Not that you can't be successful, it just takes a little longer.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. It's been great.
My name is Raj Sivasubramanian. So I work for eBay in the Global Customer Loyalty Group, managing NPS programs at eBay.
Okay. And how long have you been at eBay?
So I've been at eBay for a little under 2 years, but prior to that, I was a consultant for eBay, so I've been working with the Net Promoter Score team in eBay for about 4.5 years.
Okay. So in your presentation today, you talked about avoiding falling into the trap of metric centricity instead of customer centricity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common trap that a lot of companies can easily fall into, especially in this data-driven world that we live in, and especially because metrics have enabled CX to actually take off. So because of that, a lot of companies can overly focus on the metrics at the expense of acting on customer feedback. And what I was talking about was, if you only focus on metrics, you become metric centric, and that does a disservice to what you're trying to accomplish. So it's important to also act on customer feedback, have an element of customer culture in addition to metrics, and the total of that will drive customer centricity.
So are you saying then that there are companies that become so obsessed by the numbers that they're just recording numbers. They're not actually doing anything.
Correct. Yeah. Because that's what people want to see, right? That's what the executives want to see, the numbers. They want to track the numbers. That's what people care about.
Yeah.
And especially at the C-suite, where you're not going to get a person at the executive level to actually go to a product team and tell them to change something. They just want to see the score as a health of what the customer's doing or what the customer voice is. Because that's the focus of what executives want to see, a lot of companies fall into that trap and only focus on the metric.
You gave a delightful example in there of everybody in the room squabbling over the exact measurement of something instead of focusing on the fact that there was a big problem. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, the whole story here.
Yeah, okay.
All right. There was a goal set based on reducing the number of detractors that were talking about a key issue, and that morphed into also looking at increasing the number of promoters that talked about that issue. And basically, what happened was a pseudo NPS metric was created based on verbatim topics that wasn't really thought through. And there were two issues with that. One is the way the comments were coded had to meet a certain level of precision because of the goal that was set against it. We spent a lot of time just in a room auditing the results of the coding to make sure that it met the requirements of what should happen.
Right.
But then we also spent a lot of time just arguing about how to calculate this metric and trying to figure out if the denominator should be all respondents or only people that talked about the specific issue. And very senior people were just sitting here talking about how to calculate a metric and missing the fact that regardless of how you calculated it, it's a lot of people that have a problem that we're not solving.
Right. I love that example. It's like, let's focus. So you came up with the notion of a VP of common sense.
Yeah.
I love that. That was great.
Yeah.
You also, one thing, and this isn't directly a customer experience thing, but you talked about some of the research that you'd done and finding, for instance, that the accuracy of shipping estimates was actually more important than the shipping speed or free shipping. And one thought that occurred to me is I was wondering, how do you, in an organization like eBay, you're not the ones doing the shipping, it's the vendors who are doing the shipping.
Right.
So how do you deal with customer experience in that type of scenario?
Yeah, so I mean, that's what makes it challenging. It's not as easy as us just going to go shipping the thing. So it is, you get the customer feedback, you figure out what's important, and then that's how you prioritize what do you focus your suppliers and your vendors on. So like even just the what we agree to with various carriers, like how do we determine what we tell them to focus on? And then even some of the stuff, it's sellers that are responsible for it, right?
Right.
So we have to put policies in place for sellers. We have certain standards of sellers, and if you meet certain standards, you get discounts on selling. So one of the things that we do is to maintain certain standards, you have to agree to have a one-day handling time.
Okay.
So that goes back to the accuracy of estimates, because eBay will give you an estimate. If you buy something on eBay, you'll get an estimate. If you buy it from me and I'm the seller and I decide to wait 4 days before I ship it to you, the delivery estimate's not going to be correct, right? They're going to have a hard time estimating what that is. By putting these policies in place that people need to adhere to certain standards in order to maintain their benefits,
right. You're
able to promote things like quicker handling times.
So how would you find out if they had waited 4 days to deliver, unless the customer complains?
So the thing that we ask is we require sellers, or we encourage our sellers to have tracking information uploaded when they ship it. So you can tell when it got dropped off at the post office based on the tracking information.
Okay. So you made the point in your talk that to the extent possible, you want to get as many as your staff as possible to step into the shoes of the customer, to be the customer instead of just listening to verbatims. It kind of reminded me, years ago I worked for a bank in marketing.
Yeah.
And I made the very unpopular suggestion that marketing staff, and in fact, frankly, I think all bank staff, should pay the same customer fees that our customers had to pay, because we had no real gut understanding on how annoying those fees were. But instead, of course, that was one of the fringe benefits of being a bank.
I could see that not going over so well with employees.
So tell me about then. So you decided at eBay, I guess they decided to encourage as many people as possible to try selling and using eBay as a customer. And you said that you were able to discover things through that you didn't from all the reams of voice of the customer stuff you'd done.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what?
The example I talked about was just the shipping process and how tough that is actually for a new seller. So I'm new to the process, right? So a lot of our experienced sellers know how that works. So when you sell something, you have to determine the shipping price ahead of time by by determining the weight and the dimensions of the package.
Right.
Brand new to me. Like, I didn't know what, I just listed it, didn't bother to weigh it or go through the stuff, and then it sold. And then now I need to pay for the shipping using the, because the customer paid for shipping based on my estimate. So right. I need to ensure I ship it within that price. And an example for me actually is I got the weight wrong. Mm-hmm. So I went to the post office to drop it off, and I printed the label at home. eBay helped with that, but I got the weight wrong, and the post office wouldn't accept it. Mm-hmm. So then I told them, can I just pay the difference? And they said, no, you use a special eBay rate to print a label. You need to go void the label and print a new one.
Oh, no.
So it was just not a great experience that I had to go through. And actually, the example I told you about the CS agent coming into the CTO's office, we walked through a shipping label issue, which is becoming a big issue. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to void shipping labels if you get the weight wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really poor customer experience. We make our customers wait like 21 days to get refunded for the shipping, and all that stuff is stuff that I learned just going through that process.
It's interesting. No matter how much data you get,
and like the newer issues, like those come through. Like again, most of our survey feedback are going to come from experienced customers, right? It's a random sample, but the odds are that people that shop on eBay are going to respond to surveys. So we're missing the feedback from our newer customers and me being a newer seller and having that experience, I was able to surface something that wasn't coming through any of our traditional channels.
That's a really great point. And one of the thoughts that occurred to me when you said that was wondering, okay, if you've got employees throughout the organization who are actually trying now to be buyers and sellers,
yeah,
how do you collect that information from them? I mean, you're in customer experience, yeah, so it was obvious to you.
We're doing that as part of this whole initiative with the CTO org, where we're asking them to be the customer and then giving them the mechanism to report issues that they find.
Okay.
So
you talked in your presentation, okay, so first step was avoid obsessing about the metric.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing that, then what do you do? If you can maybe hit up your other highlights.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, if you're not, the other two areas are get the commitment to take action on customer feedback. So, yeah. So the way to do that is to just get relevant content out to people that can act on them and ensure that they're acting on them and figure out a way to set up your program that way. And then the second piece is just the building the customer focused culture. And you do that through getting employees to engage more with what you're doing and getting them to hear the customer voice more.
Yeah, tell me more about that, about how you have gone about making it possible for more employees to hear the customer voice.
Yeah, so we're actively just pushing customer content out to employees that didn't get it before. So I mentioned the monthly email of promoter verbatims that gets sent out.
And so that goes out to everybody, or?
So we're selectively doing it. So like we've met with certain organizations, like so our CTO org, and he's in favor of it. So we're adding his entire distribution list to this email. Okay. We're talking with executives that run individual teams, and then getting their support to do that. And all of this is possible. Again, it's been a common theme throughout the day. Like you have to have executive support, right? So we have executive support from the CEO on down.
Right.
So he's told his directs, we need to be more customer centric. So it makes it easier for my team to go see the CTO and say, hey, here's our plan to get your employees more engaged with customers. And he wants to do it because it's a directive that he's getting from the CEO.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, One thing that I also like was your point about doing frequent surveys, agile surveys, so that you get customer. I'm really, I come from a usability testing background. So yeah. That's kind of where you're coming from with usability testing.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet, to this crowd, it was interesting.
That's a great point. I mean, it is like in this CX world of surveys and NPS and tracking, like that iterative feedback is something that is actually new. And it was new to us, too, right? I mean, it's in our world, but we realize that when we're testing new products out, like it can be a powerful tool, like the Valet example that I talked about.
Yeah, and what was the valid example okay, for the audience? My listeners didn't get to hear your old talk. Okay,
so the eBay Valet example was it's a program we launched about a year and a half ago where you can, if you're a new seller, if you have a garage full of stuff you want to get rid of, we try to make it easier on you. Fill a box full of stuff you want to sell. We'll take the whole box from you, and then we'll sell it. We'll have experienced eBay sellers sell it on your behalf, and then when the products sell, we'll pay you what it sold minus whatever cut we take for our service. Good idea in theory. But the launch didn't work out well. So I mentioned that we ran an agile survey about the initial experience. The NPS score was -70.
Ouch.
Yeah. So there was a lot of problems. Like customers weren't getting the amount of money that we promised them for what they were selling. There were certain restrictions, like after people signed up, we told we would reject stuff because we had a minimum requirement of something had to have a fair value of at least $50, mm-hmm. but that wasn't made clear.
Right.
And then if you think about the junk you have that you want to get rid of, there's not much that's over 50. And, yeah. and if it is, you might want to actually sell it yourself.
Right.
So it wasn't actually appealing at all to customers. And that feedback came out in our Agile survey. And because of that, that team shut the program down.
Mm-hmm.
And then reintroduced it based on some of the customer feedback that we provided. I think the only other point is, I mean, I think you touched on it briefly, is the VP of Common Sense, but I think that's the thing I wanted to leave people with is that, when you are stewards of the customer voice, you kind of are the voice of reason and then the voice of common sense for an organization. And it's easy for a lot of companies that are in the weeds, looking at metrics and looking at things to just lose focus of common sense. And it's important to be able to step back and just say, does what we're doing make sense for our customers, right? Because for any company, your customers are the reason you're in business, right? Like they pay your salaries, right? So it's important to think about, is what we're doing improving the customer experience?
Right. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Hope you enjoyed those two interviews. As always, we will have a transcript of the podcast up. If not right away, it'll be up certainly by Wednesday or Thursday. And if you haven't checked out the previous episodes or want to get transcripts for any of those, we now have all of those available on the website as well. That's just at frankreactions.com/show is where you'll find all the podcast episodes. While you're there, you might want to check out the blog and you might want to subscribe to the newsletter so that you don't miss anything. This afternoon, it's Mother's Day 2015. I'm being a mother by leaving my family just for a few days and heading off to first Chicago and then Toronto. In Chicago, I'll be attending B2B Online. And if you want to go and haven't already registered, you can get a 25% discount using the code B2B15, Frank. So all capital letters, B, number 2, B, 15, Frank. And then right after that, I'm headed up to Toronto for eTail Canada. And there too, you can get a discount as one of my listeners. And the code for that is ETAILCA15FRANK. Again, all capital letters. If you're going to either of those events, I'd love to connect with you. Just send me a tweet at Tema Frank, TemaFrank, or send me an email, Tema, TEMA, at frankreactions.com. I really look forward to hopefully meeting some of you in person and to connecting with the rest of you online if that's the only way we can do it. Speaking of which, it would be absolutely awesome if you did send me your feedback. I love to hear from you. And also, if you do listen to this on iTunes or Stitcher, it'd be truly wonderful if you would leave your comments there and rate the podcast, both because that helps me know how to do it better and also because it helps other people discover this podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again in a week. Bye.